Sculpting energy to design structural objects and the creation of small life forms is not really considered recreational. They represent an integral part of task-oriented classroom instruction, although, as we have seen, these activities can be overlapped with leisure time. Music is in a special category all its own as far as almost universal soul appeal. Unlike Earth, where so many of us are unable to learn to play a musical instrument or sing, as souls we seem to be able to engage in these activities effortlessly. Melodic sounds are often heard throughout the spirit world by my subjects in spaces that are not recreational. Within the context of R&R, music is enjoyed by souls directly or interwoven into subtle frameworks for drama, dancing and even games. From my research, I have come to believe that more than any other medium, music uplifts the soul with ranges of notes far beyond what we know on Earth. There seems to be no limit to the sounds used in the creation of music in the spirit world. People in deep hypnosis explain that musical thought is the language of souls. The composition and transmission of harmonic resonance appears to relate to the formation and presentation of spiritual language. Far beyond musical communication, I'm told spiritual harmonics are the building blocks of energy creation and soul unification. Many souls enjoy singing in the spirit world, but it took me years to find a soul who is a musical director. My next case is a subject who has had a multitude of past lives where he was connected to music in one form or another. In his last life he was an Italian opera singer in the 1930s. Case 52. Dr. N, what is your major recreational activity in the spirit world? S, to create music. Dr. N, you mean with musical instruments? S, oh, there is always that. You can pull any instrument out of thin air and play it. But, for me, there is nothing more satisfying than creating a choir. The voice is the most beautiful of musical instruments. Dr. N, look, you don't have the vocal cords of an opera star any longer, so. S, laughs at me, has it been that long since you were a spirit? No human body is needed. In fact, the sounds we create are lighter and of much greater range than those on Earth. Dr. N, can everyone sing the high and low notes? S, with enthusiasm, of course they can. We all have the ability to be sopranos and baritones at the same time. My people can hit high and low notes and everyone is always on pitch, they just need a director. Dr. N, could you describe what you do? S, quietly, without boastfulness, 1 AM a musical director of souls. A singing conductor, it is my passion, my skill, my pleasure to give to others. Dr. N, are you better at this than other souls because of your musical talent in your past life as an opera singer? S, oh, I suppose that one follows the other, but not everyone is as focused on music as I am. Some souls in musical groups may not be paying attention to the entire score, smiles, because of the musical range possessed by souls, they need a director to keep all these virtuosos on track. After all, this is recreation for them. They want to have fun as well as produce beautiful music. Dr. N, so, you enjoy working with choirs rather than an orchestra? S, yes, but we mix it up to make the singing come together. When spirits apply themselves to instruments and voice sounds, it's wonderful. It's not stray notes. The harmonic meshing of musical energy reverberates throughout the spirit world with indescribable sounds. Dr. N, then all this is vastly different from working with a choir on Earth? S, there are similarities. But here you have so much talent because every soul has the capability for perfection of musical sound. There is high motivation. Souls love this form of recreation, especially if they wanted to be able to sing on Earth but sounded like frogs. Dr. N, do you bring souls from groups other than your own to be in this heavenly choir? S, yes, but lots of groups like to sing opposite each other and see who can be the most innovative. Dr. N, if you were to look into the deeper motivations for souls, can you help me understand why music is so important for them in the spirit world? S, it takes you to new mental levels, moving your energy, communicating in unison with large numbers of other souls. Dr. N, how large a choral group do you direct? S, I am partial to small groups of around 20, although there are hundreds of souls from many groups who are available for me to direct. Dr. N, large groups must be a great challenge for you. S, taking a deep breath, their range is staggering, vibrations pouring out in many directions. Everyone hitting incredibly high and low notes without warning while I am struggling with their cues, and yet it's all pure rapture. I will finish this section on recreation with a list of the most popular games souls play in the spirit world. One of my reasons for presenting the lighter side of soul socialization is to exemplify the differences between group study time and that of recreation. I have previously discussed the clannishness and rather insular attitudes of some soul groups. I do not wish my readers to assume this is a representation of the outsider-insider mentality that we so often see in cultural groups on Earth. There is no jealousy, mistrust or prejudice between spirit groups. While the younger souls are conditioned to be centered on their own training groups, this does not mean these souls see themselves as being all that different from other groups. Xenophobia does not exist in the spirit world. The information I have about how spirits from many groups play games together is one way I have of demonstrating the nature of soul behavior. Nevertheless, at my lectures, I do feel the necessity of being cautious in offering too many details about spiritual games. There are people who believe matters of life after death are far too serious for such frivolities. A few have even commented that my speaking about recreation detracts from the rest of what I have to say about soul life. Despite these criticisms, I consider it more important that the public is aware the afterlife is not so dreadfully serious that souls cannot have fun. The spiritual games I have encountered are never strictly enforced by monitors nor directed by team captains. In fact, the rules are loosely interpreted. There are elements of playful competition but without the emotional aggression one sees in sports on Earth. Spiritual games are not played with the objective that somebody wins while others lose. Games are vigorous and carefree at the same time. Our guides encourage game participation as a means of practicing energy movement, dexterity and group thought transmission. On the other hand, I have had subjects whose groups do not participate in games in the spirit world. Their separateness is always respected. This is especially true with the more advanced souls who are so engaged in other forms of energy training that game playing would be a detraction. There is a remarkable consistency to game descriptions by subjects in hypnosis. While we can take the memory of a game with us to the spirit world, it is my belief that certain games with origins in the afterlife are brought to Earth and modified from unconscious memory for use in a physical body. The reader can be the judge of the most likely game origins from the following quotes. I will start my list of a few popular games with what appears to be a form of tag. We chase around, trying to catch each other by flowing fast in straight lines and then maintaining that speed when turning sharply. The more maneuverable spirits are able to double back, stop and start again quickly without getting caught. Simple interpretations of tag and other games may be combined with music and dancing. In these versions, especially with the young, souls will chase each other into areas that have been defined as personal playgrounds. I love the meadows with trees to climb and tall grass where we can roll around chasing after each other and playing leapfrog. We can also shape-shift into objects to make our games more interesting. There is a game I hear quite a bit about which reminds me of a kind of dodgeball, where large numbers of souls line up opposite each other, and throw bolts of energy. One can also recognize elements of keep away and volleyball in the descriptions of this game called bolt banging, which requires quick position adjustments and dexterity. In our game of bolt banging, we line up in two long lines opposite each other. We create balls of energy and throw them high over an imaginary line or fire them in straight or low trajectories at the opposing players. We must stay in a confined area to exchange bolts without slowing our momentum. At first it's easy to get out of the way while making your own bolts at the same time. Then the tempo increases and our play area looks like a hailstorm. When our bolts are flying around, they can be dodged, or caught and thrown back. The object is not to be inadvertently hit by a bolt. A player who is zapped is not out, he just tries harder to be more agile. We feel the complexities of each soul carried in the bolts which hit us. Another high-velocity game is something akin to Red Rover, or perhaps bumper cars, where souls line up opposite each other in a square. Instead of sending one player over at a time to try and break through a chain of arms, as in Red Rover, these souls rush at each other en masse. One subject said, "This is a game of collision, where we bounce off one another in a chain reaction of whirling energy." The object seems to be the creation of a high volume of concentrated energy. Another client who plays this game told me, "The energy flow from all of us is pooled so that each player receives a heightened awareness from all the other souls. It's an exhilarating game. There is a magnification of all our energy which is unified. Eventually, when the energy charge lessens, we all settle down and engage in a kind of folk dance." There are many subtle games that my subjects have difficulty in describing to me. One I have heard about from a number of people, however, has the name of Gem Ball. The game is a little like marbles and lawn bowling combined with the symbolism of gemstones, which I reviewed in Chapter 6. From Case 53, it can be seen how displaying colored energy objects, as embodiments of personal character, need not be limited to our appearances at the Council of Elders. Case 53, Dr. N. Do all groups have some interest in playing games? S. Not at all. My group is fun-loving and we don't like to be tied down in classrooms too much. Some of the others find us a bit wild and undisciplined. There are four souls in our group who are not so playful, so we cherry-pick from other groups to make up our teams. Dr. N. Is it true that souls can bring all the games they enjoyed on Earth to the spirit world? S. Hesitates. Well, yes, but you don't see them all, Dr. N. Why not? Give me some examples of games you don't see. S. I don't see golf because it is too self-centered. You are mostly playing against yourself. Tennis is a little better, but I don't see that either because only two people play and that is limiting. Dr. N. Does this mean football is popular in the spirit world? S. Not really. We don't play games with stars like quarterbacks and team captains. Football is too uneven a game, with wide variations in positions. Soccer would be better. It's hard to explain. We enjoy group games with lots of souls where everyone has an equal position and is engaged in the same way, in their movements. Dr. N. I enjoy swimming, so I suppose you wouldn't see that eye there? S. Laughing. Then you'd be wrong. If you didn't want to go to Earth for this as a spirit, you could create a semblance of water here, or a golf course, whatever you require to bring back happy memories. But if you want other souls to participate with you in games of sport, then that's more of a collective matter. Dr. N. So, you see a difference between individual and group recreational activity? S. Yes, I do. Dr. N. All right, then tell me about a game which is not like the sports games we have been talking about, one perhaps which is not so robust and carefree even though it might still be considered as recreation. S. Wistfully, oh, that's easy, it's the gem ball game. Many souls come to a space where we sit in a great circle. Then each of us creates an energy ball the size of a tennis ball, which looks like a crystalline gemstone. Dr. N. Do the balls have any particular meaning? S. Of course. The energy colors represent individual expression. Dr. N. Okay. What happens next in this game? S. Each person holds their ball until someone says, go. Then, we all gently push our balls to the center of the ring. Dr. N. Do they all bang against each other, as in marbles? S. I guess, in a way. The gem balls carom off each other with radiating colors splashing in all directions, but they don't quite stop, we keep them moving. Dr. N. I'm not sure I understand, Subject breaks in and continues, S, finally, one comes to you. During each series of play, a corresponding player will receive my ball if there is a magnetic attraction. Dr. N. What if you don't receive a ball from another player? S. It happens quite often. We play rounds with large groups of different players. Eventually a ball will roll into my lap. Dr. N. Do two players have to receive a ball from each other? S. No, Gemball is not a programmed game. Anything can happen. Dr. N. What does receiving a ball from someone else mean? S. This tells you that you might be linked to the owner in some fashion. Gemball is an intimate game of expectation and trust because you never know where your ball is going or what you will receive back. Dr. N. After you receive a ball, then what do? S. Laughs, you pick up the ball that comes to you in the palms of your hands. The gem ball gives you the means to learn about the private aspects of a soul which could relate to you in a special way. I have made many future life decisions to be with certain people based upon this game. During my early research, I had no idea of the many ramifications of spiritual games. They all have their own distinctions that give pleasure. As I became knowledgeable with spiritual recreation, my subjects felt more comfortable in providing me with details about their favorite pastimes. I learned that certain games appeal to the particular character of the souls who play them. Eventually, one realized some games could escalate into training exercises and that individual souls from many groups gravitated to this activity. One game stands out in my mind in this respect. I find the hide and seek game to have significant implications for future traveler souls whom I will be discussing in the next chapter. The execution of this game offers a variety of proficiency levels in teaching spatial frames of reference to interested souls. One began to take notice of this particular game after one heard about the appearance of coaches when the game became more complex. My clients call them the game keepers. These are the specialist trainers who will expose those adventuresome beings who show talent to trips into different dimensions. Here is a quote from a highly advanced soul who wishes to specialize as a traveler. Hide and seek in the spirit world begins as an exercise between light and darkness. With the younger souls we charge up our energy from a distance and then wink it out when the kids come in our direction. We block and then open up our telepathic energy at the same time to mix up the visual and mental signals. In the beginning we create doorways of light within structured columns of energy which are employed as shadowed panels which may be arranged in parallel or horizontal lines. Later we make them random geometric patterns. Most young ones have a terrible time learning to detect and find us as we dart between the doorways. But they have fun because at this stage they still consider this playing a game. Some become so good we can't trick them anymore. In time these souls, those that want to continue, become trainees and are ready to be ushered into our playground of interdimensional zones, which are divided by energy, barriers and vibrational pulse rates. This is tough because the trainees must learn to adapt to different wave configurations which exist within each dimension and match their energy quickly to pass through. We lose many souls at this point who don't wish to continue. The work is like being in a hall of mirrors. The souls like me, who refuse to quit because we love the work, must now master the mental dimensions without structure or form. They exist as vacuums between the physical dimensions. Part of me still considers this training as recreation. It is so captivating I can't wait to get back home and engage in this exercise again with my friends. Four general types of souls. Before moving on to a discussion of the more advanced souls in the next chapter, one should list the major types of souls one have encountered within the community of spiritual life. There must be many more than these four categories of souls. However, I am limited by the memories of my clients concerning other possible soul types in the spirit world. 1. Souls who are either unable or unwilling to function individually. These souls usually work within collectives and never seem to leave the spirit world. Even so, 1 AM told all souls are given the opportunity to experiment with existing in both physical and mental universes. 2. souls who do not wish to incarnate in physical form. Also, they may not possess the requisite properties of light energy to engage in this activity. They seem to work only in mental worlds and appear to move easily between different dimensions. Most of their talents are beyond the comprehension of my clients. 3. Souls who incarnate only on physical worlds. I sense that some have the capability for training in mental spheres between lives, but are not inclined to do so. They are not attracted to interdimensional travel, even during recreation. Quite a number of my clients are in this category. 4. Souls who have both the ability and desire to function in all types of physical and mental environments. This does not necessarily give them more enlightenment than other soul types. Yet, their wide range of practical experience and capabilities position them for many specialization opportunities involving varied assignments of responsibility. The advancing soul graduation becomes that time in a soul's existence when it is ready to move away from its primary soul group. My next case comes from a soul who recently attained level 3 after thousands of years of incarnating on Earth. This subject became very excited by the images in her mind of this recent event in the spirit world. The symbolic descriptions involving analogies to educational settings by now are very familiar to the reader. In her current life, she is a teacher of children with learning disabilities. Case 54, Dr. N, you seem very blissful about appearing in front of your council. S, yes, I have scrubbed off the last of my body armor. Dr. N, body armor? S. Yes, my protective armor, to avoid being hurt. It took me centuries to learn to trust and be open with people inclined to hurt me as an outgrowth of their own anger. This was my last major hurdle. Dr. N. Why was this so difficult for you? S. I identified too much with my emotions rather than my spiritual strength. This created self-doubt in my relations with others whom I perceived to be stronger and more knowledgeable than myself, but they were not. Dr. N., if this last major hurdle involved self-identity, how do you see yourself at present? S., finally, one used a rope of flowers to swing over the abyss of pain and hurt. I no longer give away too much of my energy unnecessarily. Pause. Physical and mental hardship has to do with self-definition. In the last 1,000 years, I have improved upon maintaining my identity in each life, under adverse circumstances, and to honor myself as a human being who could not be superseded by others. I no longer need body armor to achieve this. Dr. N., what does your counsel say to you about your positive actions involving self-definition? S., they are satisfied that I have passed this difficult test, that I did not let the adverse circumstances of these many lives dictate my vision of myself, who I really am. They are very pleased that I have reached a higher level of my potential through patience and diligence. Dr. N., why do you think you had to go through so much in your lives on Earth? S., how can I teach others unless I have gone through fire myself to become strong? Dr. N., well, subject interrupts me with something which has appeared in her mind as a result of my last question. S. Oh, they have a surprise for me. Oh, I'm so happy. Note, at this moment my subject breaks down with tears of joy and anticipation of the scene unfolding in her mind. I pull out my trusty box of tissues and we continue. Dr. N., move forward and tell me what the surprise is all about. S. Bubbling. It's graduation time. We are gathering in the temple. Aru, my guide, is here along with the chairman of my council. Master teachers and students are assembling from everywhere. Dr. N., can you break this down a little for me? How many teachers and students do you see? S., hurriedly, some 12 teachers and, maybe 40 students. Dr. N., are some of the students from your own primary group? S. Pause, there are 3 of us. Students have been brought from other groups who are ready. I don't know most of them. Dr. N., I notice some hesitation on your part. Where are the others of your own group? S., with regret, they are not yet ready. Dr. N., what is the core color of all these students around you? S., Bright, solid yellow. Oh, you have no idea how long it has taken us to arrive here. Dr. N, perhaps I do. Why don't you describe the proceedings for me? S, takes a deep breath. Everyone is in a festive mood, like a coming out party. We all line up and float in, and I'm going to sit up front. Aru is smiling proudly at me. A few words are spoken by the masters who acknowledge how hard we have worked. Then our names are called. Dr. N, individually? S, yes, I hear my name, Iri. I float forward to receive a scroll with my name printed on the front. Dr. N, what else do these scrolls have on them? S, modestly, it's rather private, about those achievements which took me the longest, and how I overcame them. Dr. N, so, in a way, this is more than a diploma. It's a testimonial record of work. S, softly, yes. Dr. N, is everyone wearing cap and gowns? S, quickly, no. Then smiling, oh, 1C, you are teasing me. Dr. N, well, maybe a little. Tell me, Iri, what takes place after the ceremonies? S, we gather around to talk about our new assignments and I have the opportunity to meet with some of the souls who are in my specialty area. We will meet again in new classes that will make the best use of our abilities. Dr. N, what will be your first assignment, Iri? S, I will be nurturing the youngest souls. It's as if we will be raising flowers from the seedlings. You feed them with tenderness and understanding. Dr. N, and where do you think these newer souls come from? S, pause, from the divine egg, the womb of creation, spun out like silken thread, and then taken to the nursery mothers, and then to us. It's very exciting. The responsibility will be so challenging. Movement to the intermediate levels, when I work with a subject who is transitioning into a level 3 group, there may be some initial confusion as to why they see themselves leaving and returning to their primary cluster group on a regular basis. During hypnosis, not everyone is able to see a scene in their mind and then quickly integrate this frame into the entire movie of their spiritual life. The task of a facilitator is to proceed slowly and let the scene unfold naturally. A client who had not yet graduated from his group but had begun the process of pulling away told me, I am starting to feel a little cut off from my family. There are new souls around MC that I have not worked with before. The integrity of a soul's original cluster group remains intact in a timeless way. Regardless of who is graduating, they never lose their bond to old companions. Primary cluster groups began their existence together and remain closely associated through hundreds of incarnations. I have had souls who were with their primary groups for some 50,000 years before they were ready to move on to the intermediate levels, while a much smaller percentage have achieved this state of development within 5,000 years. Once reaching level 3, I find that souls begin to rise much more rapidly into the advanced levels. Souls develop at different rates while displaying a variety of talents along the way. I notice that when souls start to spend less time in recreation and socializing, they are working harder and becoming more focused on perfecting certain skills that will contribute to the forces of cosmic consciousness. With the attaining of level 3, there is a change in soul behavior. These souls have now begun to expand their vistas away from their primary groups. The advancing souls don't disregard all they have known before, it's just that they are now so engrossed in their training it has become an all-consuming goal. These souls are fascinated by what they can do and want to become even more proficient. By the time they approach a level 4 range of development, the transition is complete. In the course of their transition, recent level ills soon recognize that they are no longer limited to one classroom. Their old friends are aware of what is going on, but it seems to be mutually understood that not too many questions should be asked about these absences. I refer readers back to the experience of the soul of Annie in case 32. The transition is a slow one, in keeping with the practice of infinite care that is so evident in all spiritual training. The assignments to new specialty groups are formed with other like-minded souls based upon a number of considerations. The three principal elements I am most aware of for soul specialty selection are talent, past performance and personal desire. I would expect needs of the spirit world to be another important element, but this information is denied me.